we are in module two. This is the meat of the course. This is where we're really going to find out how to apply for a specific job. In module one, we looked at choosing our career focus, one or two career focuses. We looked at getting the proper education, getting the right experience for the focus, the career focus that we chose, and of course, how to network and sometimes even bypass the application process. But the real deal of everything is that most likely you're going to have to apply for a number of jobs throughout your lifetime, especially in the ocean conservation world. So this module, we are going to go through the actual application process and what I would do and tips that I can give you in applying for the actual position. So what we're going to do first, this video, is you're going to learn how to examine a job advert, an advertisement on a website, so that you get familiar with what's actually what you need to look for, what you can ignore, certain things you should focus on, which you can focus, and build your CV and your resume to actually meet the job requirements from the advertisement. So reading and analyzing the advertisement is something I had to learn to do a while back, because I wouldn't read it properly or I'd apply for jobs where I wasn't qualified. So let's get into the whole thing. I'm just gonna adjust here. Once it comes up, there we go. So I decided to choose a job advertisement that I originally saw on the Estuarine Research Foundation, and that link will be in the resources that's coming up. And there was a job advertisement for a GIS technician right here from IM Systems Group Incorporated. And if you haven't heard of IM Systems Group, essentially what IM Systems is a contractor that contracts with NOAA and the federal government to provide staff for specific tasks or projects. Some of them are short-term projects, some of them are 6 months to a year, and other times it actually works into a full-time sort of gig. Now, there are times where you could work a year contract, and then another year contract doing something else, and then another year contract until you get hired full-time. And a lot of people sort of depend on IM Systems and other groups that are out there. Again, I'll try and list as many as I see and know of in the resources section, so that you can go take a look at their career opportunities every once in a while. But what I like about these groups here is they provide government type jobs, but they also give you benefits, which the governments wouldn't be able to do on such short contracts. So these contractors are quite important to your career, because they can give you the jobs and they can give you potentially a full-time, or they can give you jobs that could lead to a full-time job in the future. And also these jobs here are great for newly graduate. A lot of the jobs are almost destined and designed for newly graduated ocean conservationists and technicians and whatever you are. So let's get into it. Let's go over. So again, this is a GIS technician position. And I've got a GIS background, so that's why this job advertisement actually stood out to me. Now, just as we go through this, just realize that yes, it is a GIS technician position, but looking over an advert is not just for a job advertisement is not just for GIS technicians. This is for everything across the board, whether you're in ocean science or in technology or whatever you want to, sales or whatever you want to be. So this is just an example that I chose. I might choose another one in another video, but let's just start with this one, and let's go through it so we can see what's going on. So let's start off. So it's a GIS technician position. It's from NOAA Fisheries Southwest Region, and the office is located in Long Beach, California. Just I guess that's southern LA or just outside LA. So, it reads here, IM Systems Group Incorporated, IMSG, and with the website, a federal government contractor located in Rockville, Maryland, is currently seeking to hire a full-time GIS technician for a one-year contract to work at the NOAA Fisheries Southwest Region office in Long Beach, California. The qualified candidate will provide GIS support and services to all staff and divisions within the Southern California NOAA Fisheries Regional Office and field offices, which are also in Santa Barbara, Carlsbad, and Long Beach. All activities will be under the direction of the NIMS project leader located in Santa Rosa, California. So let's see, I'm just going to stop there before we get into the duties aspect. When you look at this paragraph, you get quite a bit of information. You know what IAM Systems is about, which I described earlier. You know what government branch it's with. It's with the NOAA Fisheries Southwestern Region. And you know the location. So it's Long Beach, California. And you know that you're going to be working with other field offices in Santa Barbara, Carlsbad, Long Beach, and possibly Santa Rosa in California. So you're going to be looking at that Southern California area, but you're going to be headquartered in Long Beach. And essentially what you're going to be doing is the qualified candidate will provide GIS support and services to all staff and divisions. So essentially what you're going to be doing, from what I get out of this, in terms of with my GIS experience, is you're going to be holding data, organizing data, making maps and other products for staff to support their project. So you're probably going to be working on multiple projects, where you have to deal with some project management aspects to organize all the projects. You're going to have some organization in terms of how you deal with the data, and you're going to have to work with a lot of different staff from different offices, not only in your local office in Long Beach, but in other offices. So you're going to have a lot of communication skills in terms of that. So that's what I get just out of the first paragraph. So lots of information in there. So let's just continue to the duties. So let's look here. So duties. Develop a GIS base map for use as a desktop viewer application that incorporates available habitat data for Southern California and pertinent base layers, including bathymetry, coastline, and major roads, to facilitate the identification of sensitive habitats near proposed project locations during essential fish habitat EFH consultations. So just that, before we get into the bullet points, let's look at this little paragraph. So essentially you're going to be looking at, or you're going to be developing base layers. So looking at bathymetry, you're looking at coastlines, you're looking at major roads. So what that tells me right there is you're going to be not only getting data, probably in the form of actual layers. So in GIS, there's vector and there's raster layers. Vector layers are like road maps, so little lines or dots or of stations or things like that. So what you're going to be doing is you're going to look at the bathymetry, coastline, major roads. You're going to be using those as base layers, but you might have to edit them and change them as you see fit and customize them to what's currently out there. And you might also be working with some satellite imagery or some sort of aerial imagery to make sure that the road layer that you have is updated and ready to go. And you're also going to be preparing them for some consultation. So you might be preparing maps and data for consultations that the government has with either consultants or developers or anything like that. So very important work. Quite an interesting project. Something to consider. So let's look at the first point. Create a GIS for interactive use by staff not trained in GIS that inventories existing habitat mitigation sites associated with NIMS SWR, that's the Southwest Region, projects, and integrates relevant project information. So looking at project name, purpose of mitigation, images, etc., through a linked database. So you're going to be working with a lot of data, and you're going to be working with data that has to be used by the staff, so it has to be very interactive. So normally when you're a GIS person, you're going to be working with a database that's just, you look at it, you have a table. It's going to be almost like an Excel spreadsheet, but it's going to be in, say, in Microsoft Access or any other kind of database system. It might be a little more sophisticated than that, but it tends to be Microsoft Access a lot of the times. But what happens is it's just a table that you see. What you might have to do is you might have to customize it to actually make it very user-friendly. So add buttons. So I almost have like a face where you add buttons and you have to, if somebody presses a button, they can submit a record. If they want to enter record, you have a bunch of text boxes and things like that. Then you have a submit button, they submit it in, and you can control what kind of data goes in and stuff like that so that the user can't really mess things up, which they often do, especially in GIS. And all my GIS friends out there will understand that. So what you're looking at is you're going to be preparing data and perhaps some tools that will be used by staff that are not trained in GIS, that are fairly new, and fairly they're beginners, I guess. Maybe not even beginners, below that, I guess. But then you have to, put in pertinent information like project name, purpose of mitigation, images, things like that. So there's lots of information that's going to be going in there, and you have to create that, which requires some sort of Microsoft Office or some sort of database management skills, which you can learn in, in any kind of GIS school or any kind of GIS course if you get the proper course. The second bullet point, create shapefiles and geodatabases. Well, that's pretty simple if you're a GIS person. A shapefile is just a layer that you see in a GIS, and geodatabases is just a database that actually has an XY point. So you're looking at that. You're probably looking at ESRI, so Environmental System Research Institute is a software company, which we'll get into later. But that's, going into the GIS aspect of it. The next point, the third point, is create GIS maps and analyses for use in essential fish habitat and Endangered Species Act consultations, law enforcement reviews, and commercial fish tracking. So what I see from this bullet point is you're creating a GIS map for analysis, but you're using it for specific types of projects. So it would be handy if you had some type of experience working on those projects, either species at risk or creating fish habitat layers in a GIS form. Remember, again, it's not really important that you know these kind of skills because it's just an example, but the point is when you look at a job advertisement, you want to make sure that from the duties or the description of the job that you identify some of the skills that are in this are in the duties in the description that may not be in the required qualifications that you can put in your CV. So what you want to do is you want to write all this as you go through this paragraph. You want to write all the skills that you think will go into it before you even look at the required qualifications. Then you want to look at the next bullet point. We'll go through all these. We'll take our time. We'll go through all these. So assist in the development of spatial analysis and assessment products that integrate information on the distribution and the conservation of eelgrass and kelp habitats, as well as other protected resources such as marine mammals, sea turtles, and salmonid species. So again, you're looking at species at risk or focal species that you're going to be working with, looking at eelgrass and kelp habitats, which are obviously big habitats out there. It's very numerous and very important habitats out on the California coast, which you're going to be dealing the geography that you're going to be dealing with. So what you want to do is you're looking at you probably want to have some type of background in developing spatial analyses. Now you don't have to have specific spatial analyses for these types of projects, but it might help. So it might help even if you don't have that kind of experience to look up some studies that have been done on endangered species or marine mammals or sea turtles, looking at spatial analysis, because you can get those in the literature very easily. Next bullet point, create maps that depict live and dead strandings of marine mammals with contact responses. So looking at this, you're assuming you're going to have data, but you're going to have to create maps that can be easily communicated to the users, which are people who don't know GIS whatsoever. They just want a map. Fairly straightforward. I mean, it's just creating maps. The skills there is you can just you're used to creating maps for experience or sorry, skills and experiences. Creating the maps properly, cartographically correct, and easy to communicate to any kind of user. The next bullet point: integrate CALCOM SQL database into GIS and create a spatial representation that depicts catch information by port, including type of gear used, and investigate ways to correlate the spatial data to marine mammal entanglements. So CALCOM SQL database is a type of is a type of database. You want to be able to you have to be able to integrate that into a GIS and then create a map, a spatial representation that depicts the catch information by port, including type of gear used and things like that. So the one thing that I would suggest once you've gone through the job advertisement is you want to Look at Calcom SQL database. Find out if it's an actual software package, or maybe it's just Calcom is an acronym for something. I'm not familiar with Calcom SQL database, but something that you want to research because they actually mention it in the job advertisement. So if you're not going to mention it in your resume or your application, you probably won't even get called back. And definitely in an interview, they're going to ask if you have any type of experience with that, I'm sure. Or if you know about it. The next bullet point, train various NIMS SWR staff on how to incorporate and use GIS to enhance their productivity. So you're going to be training staff how to use GIS. So if you've ever taught anybody how to use a GIS, you're pretty much okay with that, I would imagine anyway. If you've taught a workshop or course on it, that's even better. Create maps and design or develop GIS databases for any new NIMS project where GIS utilization would assist in project completion. So essentially, you're looking at creating maps again, design and develop GIS databases, same as kind of what you did up here, create, you know, shapefile geo databases. You're essentially doing the same thing here, except just for new projects. So you have to have the ability to take on new projects. And when you're a GIS technician or a GIS analyst, however you want to name it, you have to be able to juggle and start new projects and juggle old projects all the time. So that's something that you really have to know. So, like I said earlier, you've gone through the duties, you've written down some of the key aspects to look up to research. So, you know, some of the key words in here, looking at essential fish habitat, Endangered Species Act consultations, law enforcement reviews, commercial fish tracking. You should research that before you even begin your application process, filling out your application. You can look up how to create databases from the first point, how to create databases that are user-friendly. So in other words, creating buttons or something like that that will work either on Microsoft Access or perhaps Calcom SQL database, which is another key word, Calcom SQL database, I would say is something you want to look up. You probably want to research some projects that are mentioned in here. I believe it's the fourth point, looking at spatial analysis and assessment products to integrate information, the distribution and conservation of eelgrass, kelp habitats, as well as other protected resources such as marine mammals, sea turtles, and salmon species. Try and look those up in some of the journals or online on Google Scholar just to find out some projects that are available. And then maybe you've had experience on that. I don't know. Hopefully you've had if you're going to apply for this job, because it seems to be pretty important. And then, of course, create maps to depict live and dead strandings. If you have experience with marine mammals in any kind of way using GIS, it's good to put that kind of stuff down. Again, you write all this stuff down either on an Excel spreadsheet or you write it down on a piece of paper, whatever you need to write it down. Write it down under a duty section and then figure out what you need to learn. Next section, required qualifications. The required qualifications are, like, I'll go through this again. And this, when it says, just to let you know, when it says required qualifications, required means it's essential. You have to have every single one of these qualifications in order to qualify for the position. I use qualify twice. I don't know why. If you want your resume to be looked at twice, you have to have every single one of these bullet points as experience or qualifications. Okay? You need to know this. If you don't know this, do not apply for this position. Okay? If you meet 9 out of the 10, do not apply because you're missing that one. Because you know someone has that 10th qualification. So it's very important. This actually is a big time saver. It's this filter. Even though the job seems really good, but if you don't have the experience, there's no point in applying for it because they're not even, the human resource department or wherever it goes will not even look at it. Because you got to remember, as I said in the module 1, the internet today allows for thousands of resumes, hundreds to thousands of resumes to come in to the human resource department or to the professor or whoever's getting it, the manager, whoever's hiring. And so they're just going to filter through. They're going to look, sometimes they run it through a database, or they run it through some sort of filter, like computer filter, where they only picks up keywords used in the actual job advertisement. Other times, they just kind of look. If you don't meet the required qualifications, they throw it out. And that's they've heard that from an actual. I've heard that actually from my phone's going off. I apologize. I've actually heard that from a human resources person. They don't even look at your kind of skill set. So, have the required qualifications. So let's look at all these qualifications. So knowledge of GIS principles, terminology, and methods. Well, essentially, if you're applying for a GIS technician position, you should have this background knowledge, and it usually comes in the form of some sort of course or program that you've grad from which you've graduated. So, for instance, for me as a GIS person, I've actually graduated from a school that had a GIS program and remote sensing program. So I actually had to do that. So I would have this knowledge of GIS principles, terminology, and methods. Second one, knowledge and proficiency of Environmental Systems Research Institute, ArcInfo and ArcView software version 9.2 or higher. Now, previously I mentioned ESRI. Well, that's what this is. You've got ESRI, okay? And ArcInfo and ArcView software, that is their soft. Those are their software products. So you have to know not only ArcInfo and ArcView, but you have to know. Well, those are actually licenses. But you have to know the fact. You have to know ArcMap, ArcCatalog, all the different software products that are in that you're going to be using. And again, that can come from knowledge. That's a knowledge of. You don't have to have a specific experience, or proficiency. I guess you have to have. You have to know how to use these types of software. It's very important that you have that you know this, and that you demonstrate it in your resume, which we're going to go through, or in your cover letter, which we're going to go through in the next video. Knowledge and proficiency. The next bullet: knowledge and proficiency of. Again, yeah, I'm just going to say ESRI because I hate saying Environmental Systems Research Institute. The extensions of the software. So ESRI extensions of spatial analyst, publisher, and it's actually 3D analyst, and the version 9.2 and higher. Well, again, you have to have some sort of experience in that type of setting. So I have spatial analyst extension experience and 3D analyst extension experience. However, I don't necessarily have publisher analyst extension, but it's not hard to get knowledge in that. Because remember, it is knowledge. It's not actually experience. If they say well, they say proficiency, so you have to know how to use it. But unless they say experience, you don't have to actually prove that you have had experience. It will help if you actually prove it. But right now, it just says knowledge and proficiency. So you have knowledge and you've actually used it before. Maybe not on a particular project, but you could have done a training module or something on it. Next bullet, basic cartographic skills. Well, that again, you would probably have based on your education. Now, I don't know why they actually. I don't really like it when the job advertisements have these, separated into four bullets. They obviously find it more important, very important. But this can actually just go into some sort of education in a GIS school. But it looks like they're not even requiring an education in the school. You just have to have a knowledge of all this stuff. So this is kind of open to everybody, not just GIS technicians. And then it says familiarity. Oh, sorry, I missed one. Ability to work independently and with attention to detail. Pretty straightforward requirements. This is almost something you would demonstrate in an interview. You wouldn't necessarily demonstrate it in. You wouldn't necessarily have to demonstrate it on your CV in particular, but you can mention it in your CV or your resume, sorry, just to make sure you have that in. Then you got familiarity with Microsoft Excel software and other databases. So Microsoft Excel, pretty much people have experience in it unless you're a Mac person. But even then, you have Mac numbers. So you're pretty much familiar with Excel. The databases, you're looking at this CalCom SQL database, you're looking at Microsoft Access, you're looking at ESRI ArcCatalog, which is their geo database. You can mention all those that you're either familiar or you've used them. If you've used them, put it down on your CV. Again, we're going to go through that in the next video. The next point, capacity to analyze data requests and design appropriate products. So again, this is more of people are gonna you're working with multiple people, multiple managers or multiple project leaders. They're gonna come to you and they're gonna say, "We need a map of such and such. We need a map of the coastline with with marine mammal strandings, this and that." You have to be able to take that, organize that request, and give them a specific date and when you can give it out based on how busy you are with other projects or the priority level of the project. So in other words, you're going to have to be able to manage projects and then design the appropriate products for that. So sometimes, you know, a map may not be required, or it may just be a table or something like that. So you have to have the ability to process that and figure out what is the best product for the specific task that's requested. So you have to be able to understand that. The next stage is ability to identify and obtain useful data sets. So when you're a GIS person, those who aren't GIS people, you have to, a lot of times you have to go out and look for databases that are in your area, focused in your study region. It's always good to know what kind of online databases are going on and such and such. So you have to be able to find identify the right database and the right information to use. So fairly important to know that. And you can actually, before you research the project, before you start your application process, you can actually go in and figure out, you know, look around Southern California on the internet and look at the different institutes and what kind of databases they have on, like, public record and things like that. Then you have the next one is the ability to manage data holdings in an organized structure. So again, GIS people need to organize their data. They need to document their data either in a metadata standard or their own. But it has to be clear, and it has to be where someone can come on their computer or come on their network drive and be able to pull data from their folders that are pertinent to what they need. They need to be able to identify it quickly so they're not looking. They don't have to actually ask somebody. Because just in case you actually leave that position, either for a better position or your contract ended, they want to be able to come up after and say, "Hey, this guy left in an organized," or "this person," either man or woman, left this data in an organized fashion. So if a contract ever does come up again, we're going to say, "Well, let's take Andrew, or let's take Sally Joe, or whoever was there. Let's get them back, and let's have them work on this project again, because they're familiar with everything and they leave everything in great shape." And the last one, willingness to promote GIS to staff and educate or train staff in GIS on an ad hoc basis. So essentially, you will be a teacher to anybody who doesn't know GIS. So sometimes people just want to see layers. You will install a free piece of software on their computer and show them how to use it. And I believe it's called, for ESRI, it's called, I forget the name, ArcReader. Actually, that's the name. It's ArcReader, where essentially you can bring in shape files or GIS layers and just view them. You can't do any kind of analysis on them, but you can view them, and then people can, and you can take a look at some of the layers that other people send. And then they'll send you the layers and say, "I need this on a map with something other laid on top," or something like that. But you have to train them in using that software if they're not familiar with that software. And it's actually better if you train them to use that software, because if not, they're just going to get a layer and they're going to give it to you and they're going to be like, "I need a map to see what this looks like." And that takes up time. You don't want to have to deal with that, especially if you're managing quite a number of projects, which is going to sound like in this area. So when you go for this when you look at the required qualifications, now that we've gone through them all, and yes, they're not pertinent to everybody because it is a GIS-based job skill. Oops. You have to be able to have each qualification. Okay, you have to have each qualification that's listed here. If you don't, there's no point in applying for the job. Now, having this qualification, the qualifications are fairly basic. They're actually not that bad at all. So, you know, they don't even require a degree from a GIS college or degree program. They don't even actually require you to have any kind of knowledge in marine science. It would be a benefit if you did, because you're obviously working in a marine science or coastal science area, but you don't necessarily have to have that. So you can just be any type of GIS or some developer, things like that, that want to work in this kind of business. However, if you do have that kind of background, it would be good to mention it when you do your application, because you are dealing with marine mammals and you're dealing with sea turtles and you're dealing with marine species. And if you have some kind of consultation experience, if you've dealt with endangered species, essential fish habitat, things like that, creating maps for a science-based firm or government position, then you're in pretty good shape. But it's actually not that bad to apply for this kind of job because it's very basic in terms of what you do for them. So let's go look at the instructions on how to apply. Now, before we get into this, some positions, some job advertisements will actually have a second tiered qualifications where it's not necessarily required, but it says preferred. And a lot of times you'll probably see Bachelor of Science required, Bachelor of Science in, say, natural science, or if we're looking at ocean conservation, you're looking at marine science, ecology, wildlife biology, or such and such, or natural resource management, depending on what the job is. And then it'll say preferred of an advanced degree in the same kind of subject matter. Well, the preferred can actually be the higher degree, the advanced degree, will either be a master's or a PhD. So remember that when they're looking at preferred and you don't have a master's or PhD, you could get ousted by someone with a master's or a PhD. However, because it's not in the required qualifications, you don't have to have that qualification to apply for the position. It's just a preferred kind of thing, or an asset, or, you know, something other kind of descriptive word. So you can actually still apply for that and they'll still look at your resume. However, if you go compete against someone with a master's or a PhD that has similar type of experience, you're done. They're probably not going to look at you unless they know you through your networking and they know you can do the job. So something to keep an eye on when you're looking at it. A lot of government jobs are fair. The job, government job adverts, when you're looking straight at the government, so not going through a contractor, they'll have required, preferred, or asset qualifications and things like that, and extras and whatnot. So keep an eye out for that. Now let's look at the instructions on how to apply. So it says, please submit your resume, the contact information for 3 references, your salary requirements, and a cover letter explaining how your qualifications meet the requirements of the positions to, and the email address, with the following subject line, and then you have your subject line for the position. The salary for this position is between $55,000 and $65,000. Okay. And then it says, IMSG offers an outstanding benefits package, including company-paid medical benefits and 3 weeks paid time off. Not pretty good, actually. It's not bad, the benefits. But let's go back to the beginning. We're going to look at, okay, so what you have to submit is you have to submit your resume with your contact information, the contact information for 3 references, your salary requirements, and a cover letter explaining how you qualify to meet the requirements, how your qualifications meet the requirements for the position. So essentially what you're going to do is you're going to have a cover letter that actually proves that the experience you list on your resume fit the exact requirements that are in the required qualifications in this job advertisement. Okay. You're also going to put in your references and the contact information, so probably an email and or a phone number, as well as where they work. Okay, so sometimes that can have a really good, that can be a really good factor. And then, of course, your salary requirements, which I don't really understand why they put in the salary requirements, because they mention the salary is between 55 and 65K. Usually they don't mention a salary and they ask for your salary requirements. And that, when they ask for your salary requirements, I don't really like the fact that they ask for your salary requirements, but keep in mind that could be a qualifier. If you ask for $85,000, you're probably not going to get the job, because this seems to be some sort of either beginner to intermediate position. Here they tell you between, 55 and 65K. In all honesty, I would put probably 60 to 65, or just put in the entire range. I can take in, like, if you're willing to work for 55, put in 55 to 65, because they'll probably say, well, how about 55? All you have to do for this one is just put in the range, maybe 60,000 for your pay, and you'll be fine, because it's right in the middle of the salary. So that's what I would do anyway. But I always find it's very sketchy. I don't like the fact that I have to put down salary requirements, but more and more job advertisements are actually doing it. So there is a bit of a science. I mean, if you can rationalize why you deserve a certain amount, then do it. Okay, if you want 65K and you say, well, I have this and this background, I've been working in this field for 10 years or 11 years or 12 years or however long you've been working on it, I want 65. If you've only just graduated and you have some of these abilities and and you meet all the required qualifications, don't say 65K because you're probably not going to get that and it might cancel you out of the competition in general. So just say 55K, get your experience, and maybe you can move up during that time. But that's what I would do. And don't forget, when you email your application, put in the subject line this statement here. It is imperative because what they probably have is they probably have some kind of automatic feature in Microsoft Outlook, which is their email. I'm sure it's their email tool or email program. And once you put that in exactly, it'll take that email and put it into a folder automatically where people can access it very easily. That's why they put that subject heading. It also shows that you can follow directions pretty easily. Now, if you put in the same statement and miss one letter, like say you put S at the end of technicians, it will not go into that folder and you will not qualify for that competition, for this job advertisement competition. You will be canceled out of it because it will not go in the folder and they will not read it. So be sure that you can actually qualify for this, okay? Some things to, or that you follow instructions, some things to consider before we end this video. If you are not an American citizen, you will have to show in your CV or somewhere on your application that you can get a visa on your own if you can, or that you can lay out, you can say, I have the ability to work in the United States. Okay, because if you don't, they're not even going to look at you. You already have an X against you. If you're like for me, if I'm Canadian, I already have an X against me because I'm Canadian. That's in their eyes, it's extra work, but they can still take me on if I show them, demonstrate that, hey, this is the process that happens. You need to do this. I need to do this, and then we can go along. And it's actually for a Canadian, it's actually quite easy because it's the NAF, I fall under the NAFTA agreement. As long as I fall under a certain title, and it's actually quite easy. I just have to cross the border with some paperwork, and it's up to the customs officer whether they want to let me in or not. So, but make sure you got to put that in if you in your somewhere in your application on the visa, because a lot of the organizations don't want to deal with immigration, which I don't blame them, because it's a hassle, especially when you're considering an American student or American citizen. Which is a lot easier for them to deal with, or a Canadian citizen, or whatever the citizen is in that country. So, that is essentially how to read a job advertisement. Some takes. So, I hope you took a lot of notes. Write some things down. In the resources, I'm going to have some worksheets and stuff. So, check it out on how to. Write on just a spreadsheet on writing things down for the duties and the required qualifications. And I'm actually probably going to do another, I'm going to do another video on maybe a more structured one and something different that applies to everybody. I'm going to try and find a job ad that's because I don't want to just make one up. I want to get one that's actually out there. And just to let you know, I didn't rehearse on this one. I just decided to read it the way you would read it the first time you see it. So, I haven't seen this advertisement before. Well, I actually saw it a long time ago. I considered applying for it, but I decided not to because it was only a 1-year contract and it was all the way in California and I live up in Ontario, Canada. So, some things to, there's lots of things to consider there. Watch the video over and over again if you have to. That's why I put the video up so you can go over and over and rewind and fast forward and things like that. So, keep an eye out for your action item. Look at the resources for for what you can do on how you can collect information from these job adverts, and I will see you in the next video.